Welcome, welcome. So we do have, this is a five-session class, and this is session five. So there's some basic stuff that we've gone over that people who've been coming are familiar with. None of this is really super complicated, though. So, you know, it should be pretty easy to follow along. And if you have any questions, please feel free to ask questions. If you have any questions at the end, I stick around for a little bit at the end. But I'm glad everybody's here. If anybody wants to introduce themselves to anyone, if you're sitting next to someone new or somebody new here, or you just want to say hello to the people next to you, this is a good time to do that. So let's start with a simple meditation. We'll spend a little time, since this is Meditation 101, we'll spend a little time doing that. So everyone get comfortable where you're sitting. If you're sitting on a cushion, you know, whatever is comfortable for you, whatever position is comfortable. Normally we sit on a cushion because it raises your bottom up a little higher than your lower legs, and that can help. It helps keep your back straight, which is really important, and then can help keep your legs from falling asleep too. As I've said before, the only reason I sit this way is because I've done a lot of stuff in my life that involves being flexible, and this actually is the only way I can sit like this and not have my legs fall asleep. So there's absolutely no reason why you have to sit in any. They say that the full lotus position or Vajracross like this is supposed to be better for higher levels of meditation, which I'm not even trying yet. But the main point is to be comfortable. If you're sitting in a chair, then it's helpful to have a cushion below your feet, especially if your feet don't reach all the way to the floor. You wouldn't want your legs dangling. So that's what the cushions are nice for. The most important thing is to have your back straight. So if you are sitting in a chair, it's nice to sit up straight so you're not slouching or leaning back against the chair, but more sitting in a straight, upright position. Your arms, if you want to have your hands resting comfortably on your knees, you can do that. Normally, in this Tibetan tradition, we have our palms facing up, right hand resting on the left hand, thumbs just gently touching, and your hands just resting in your lap, comfortably in your lap. And again, back straight is very important. Back nice and straight. People say sometimes it's like it's helpful to think of your spine as like a stack of coins or a stack of blocks. Nice stacked spine, straight up and down. Some people like the idea, or this one helps me sometimes. Imagine you're like a puppet or a marionette, and you have a string coming up from the top of your head, the crown of your head, lifting your back up very straight. Shouldn't be stiff, shouldn't be rigid, just nice, straight, comfortable position. You feel like you're very supported by your back, like your spine is supporting your entire body. Your eyes are just kind of gazing out in front of you, nowhere in particular, just kind of staring ahead and slightly down, directed, your gaze directed downwards towards the floor. Not really focusing on anything. If it helps you to have your eyes closed, have your eyes closed. If you're going to have your eyes open, usually they say just having your eyes slightly open, just to let in a little bit of light, not really focusing on anything. And so you can have your lips closed, your teeth, your jaw relaxed. If your teeth are just slightly apart, that's fine. Your tongue resting on the roof of your mouth right behind your front teeth, right behind your upper teeth. It's the tip of your tongue just touching the roof of your mouth behind your front teeth. It helps reduce the need to swallow. And then your head just inclined slightly, maybe tilted slightly down, just so it naturally directs your gaze towards the floor. about 6 feet in front of you. You can experiment with raising your head a little bit or lowering your head, just finding a position that's comfortable. So if you've been practicing any meditation to settle your mind, like counting the breaths or the 9-round breathing, we're going to go ahead and practice that. I'll give you like 5 minutes to practice that. For those who are new, if you just focus on your breath, just notice your breathing. Notice the sensation of breathing in and out. And narrow your attention to the tip of your nose as you breathe through your nose. The air passing in and out the tip of your nostrils. Just focus your attention there, watching the air pass in and out. As you breathe out, and then breathe in again. As you fully complete that in-breath, count one. And then you breathe out again. And in again, count two. And just count up to 10. If you reach 10, start over. For everyone else, you can do that. Or 9-round breathing. Whatever you prefer. It's always good at the beginning of a meditation session to spend a few moments settling your mind, just kind of leaving behind whatever you were doing before the meditation session, focusing your attention on what you're doing right now. And then we take time to make a positive motivation, think about our intention. Think about how spending some time meditating is a great way to benefit your mind, learn how to have a calmer mind, a more focused mind, more control over what goes on in your mind. Spending that time, a little bit of time in meditation every day, can be a great benefit to you. and also to other people. People close to you, people you encounter every day. And then even beyond that, improving yourself, improving your mind, can be a benefit to all beings, all sentient beings, all living beings. So visualize in the space above your head a sphere of white light, pure, transparent, and formless, somewhat smaller than the size of your head. Spend a few minutes just concentrating on the presence of this sphere of white light just above your head. Don't worry if you can't sharply visualize it, imagine it. It's fine to just feel that it's there. Just think about it being there. So think of this sphere of white light, this pure sphere of white light above your head, as representing all universal goodness and love and wisdom. It's the fulfillment of your own highest potential, all the positive states of mind that you can possibly develop, that you have the potential to develop. So visualize this sphere of light decreasing in size, becoming smaller and smaller, until it's a small, very bright sphere, about an inch in diameter, about the size of a ping pong ball. A brilliant sphere of light right above your head. And this small ball of pure white light descends through the top of your head and down into your heart center. Just imagine bringing that sphere of white light down through the crown of your head, down to your heart. From there, it begins to expand again, slowly spreading to fill your entire body. As the sphere spreads, all the solid parts of your body dissolve and become light. Your organs, your bones, blood vessels, tissue, skin, all become pure, formless, white light. concentrate on this experience of your body as a body of light. Think that all problems, negativities, and hindrances have completely vanished, and that you've reached a state of wholeness and perfection. Feel serene and joyful in this experience. If any thought or distracting object should appear in your mind, let it also dissolve into white light. And continue meditating in this way. So as you prepare to end the meditation, think about dedicating all the positive energy, all the merits of spending this time in meditation, to your well-being and the well-being of all sentient beings, the benefit of all sentient beings, all beings everywhere. Gently bring your attention back into the room and relax. So how's that? Put you in a nice state of mind, I think. Good. How's everybody doing with the homework? Is anybody able to meditate on a regular basis? Yeah? A little bit? Every day, maybe? Every couple days? Giving it a shot? Anyone have any questions, any thoughts, any experiences, observations they want to share? Yeah. There you go.
So I don't know how to describe it, but I've been finding myself angry more often, and I think it was because I got so good at not addressing it. So when I, you know, when I meditate and being more aware of what's going on with me and everything, it's not like I'm unhappy. There was just, you know, I notice more anger.
Mm-hmm.
So now I got to figure out how to deal with that. But I'm grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You're grateful for it. That's great. One of the interesting things about meditation, I mean, just about any teacher that I've listened to here at Kadampa Center says this. One of the signs that you're improving is it seems like things are getting worse. Or one of the signs that you're making progress. Because we have all these thoughts buzzing around in our heads all the time, all these distractions, all these feelings, and we just aren't always aware of them. Sometimes they're pulling the strings without us being aware of it. So it may seem, and I've certainly experienced this, that you seem like you're more distracted or more impatient or more angry even. And if it's like something that you're okay with, you're like, oh, I guess this is just part of the process, then that's fine. One thing you can do, if you're experiencing anything in meditation that you're having a hard time dealing with or that's bothering you, you can make an appointment to talk to one of the monks or nuns here. We have people here who have been studying meditation. They're in their 40s now, and they've been doing this since they were like 7 years old, literally. So, we have several nuns here who spent most of their lives doing what we all do, going to work and driving a car and, you know, having a house and all that good stuff. And they decided, you know, later in life to become nuns. And now they're living that life. And they still drive cars and stuff. But, so they have a very good perspective of what it's like to be someone who did not grow up in a monastery and did not, you know, grow up around all this tradition and everything and then now practicing it. But you can always do that. You don't have to be like a regular member here, or there's like no rules about being able to make an appointment with one of the monks and nuns. I think it's appointments@kadampacenter.org. You can send me an email. I should have put up my little board with my email address on it, but if you want to get my email, you know, you can always get that after class. And then shoot me an email and I can put you in touch. I can send you at least the correct person to get in touch with to make an appointment. And you can always do that. Anytime you run into anything in meditation that's bugging you, or you feel like you've hit a plateau, or you just want some advice, the monks and nuns here are very happy. I suggest them because they're way better at helping you with this stuff than I would ever be. But they have the perspective and the experience and the have done the studying to be able to help you with some of that stuff. So it's always an option. And that's available to anybody. Feel free. They have a good sense of humor about this stuff too. So, anything else? Anybody else? Observations, difficulties, questions? Everything's good? All right. Yes.
I just have a difficulty with keeping my eyes slightly open. It's mm-hmm. like they keep fluttering or it's distracting, mm-hmm. but I keep trying.
Mm-hmm.
Does that, I mean, I don't know, is it, you say it's okay to keep your eyes shut,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't know if I don't know. That's just what I observe. I mean, I can't. Mm-hmm. I'm having difficulty keeping them open.
I found that difficult, too, for a while, to be able to just have them slightly open and not focusing on anything. So I would say that with a little bit of practice, you actually can get better at that. If you just keep doing it, because part of it is like we're not used to walking around all day with our eyes halfway open, you know, if they're either open or they're closed. So having them just like slightly open is kind of a weird thing to do. But I found just doing it and practicing it, eventually you just kind of do it without it being weird or without it being annoying. So that's one thing you can try is practicing it. If it's better to have them closed, if it's less distracting, then just do that. Yep. Anything else? Yes. I'm out of stuff to talk about, so we're, you know, no, I'm kidding.
So I actually had a very positive experience, but what I find is when I'm meditating with others that are also meditating, especially when you start focusing on that white energy, mm-hmm. that I find that it becomes more and more strong for me. Like I can actually, you know, feel the heaviness of it as I'm focusing it on the energy through my body. So it's always helpful for me to be around people who are also meditating.
Mm-hmm.
That's my experience.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, and I don't know. I've heard a lot of the teachers say that it's more beneficial and more powerful to meditate as a group. As far as the exact why of that, I mean, I guess you could talk to different people and there'd be different opinions about it. But yeah, it's, and that's one of the reasons why we do this, is because it's, you know, nice to do things like this as a group, for sure. Yes.
Since I started coming here, I've been going to the Sunday services and some of the other special things, and I've really had a hard time not falling asleep, which is hard. It's a surprise because I'm an insomniac and I never sleep during the day and have trouble at night. And so finally this week I decided I needed to give into that. And so I came here and I just laid down on one of the cushions for a couple hours. And it really made a huge difference. And one of the things that came to me, sort of like what she said, is I think the reason I get that is I pick up the energy in the room and it relaxes me. And so I wanted to be here when no one was here, and like residual energy or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, like I said, I felt like I needed to give in to whatever that was, and it helped.
Good. Excellent. Excellent, excellent. Thank you. Anybody else? Good stuff. All right. So, talk a little bit about, we have talked a little bit about the different types of meditation. Does anybody remember specific types of meditation that we've talked about? In Tibetan Buddhism? Concentration is one of them. You have concentration meditation, a few different names for it, but the idea is like the breathing meditations we do, counting the breaths, or the bare attention exercise where you just watch your breath without actually counting. The real goal of that is to improve your ability to just focus on one thing. And we use the breath because it's always there. We're always breathing. But we're not always consciously focusing on our breathing. It just kind of happens in the background. So that's the point of the basic breathing meditations, to improve your ability to concentrate, to just focus on one thing, which we are horribly bad at, even whether we realize it or not. You know, we're always thinking, there's always a lot going on up there. They say that, I think it's something like 64, they say 64 separate moments of minds, 64 second, like, thoughts, you could think of it as, in the snap of the fingers. So that's what these, you know, meditators and Buddhist scholars say that have studied the mind. They say that's what the Buddha said himself. But so yeah, and you know, we kind of, it's kind of interesting in our culture. And I don't know if it's so much now, but certainly for a while there was a lot of emphasis on multitasking, right? That's being seen as a good thing, being able to do multiple things at once. And people who have studied this say, yeah, you're not really as good at that as you think you are. You're actually just doing one thing at a time and switching back and forth very quickly, which isn't really the best way to get things done. I like that evaluation of it because that tends to be what I find in my personal experience. So I'm certainly biased towards that idea that it's better to focus on one thing at a time. Because as soon as I start focusing on too many things, then it's just the ping pong ball, the rubber bouncy ball bouncing around in the room, and nothing really gets done. But the idea of just being able to focus your attention, you know, that A, we're not very good at it, not maybe as good as we think we are, that we can get better at it with a little bit of practice, and that there's this great benefit in just being able to focus your attention on one single thing. You know, it's a very important, very main point in what we do. So that's what concentration meditations are all about. Does anybody remember another kind of meditation? Analytical. Yep, analytical meditation. Does anybody remember, did we talk much about analytical meditation, what it's for, what it's about, why we do it? I mean, we've done some that are kind of analytical. What are some of the meditations we've done that are analytical meditations? Does anybody know? What's that?
The mind like the sky,
yeah. So, you know, going through this concept or visualizing how your mind is like a clear sky and thoughts are like clouds going through the sky. Yeah. We did the one mind like the ocean, kind of a similar thing, where you think of your mind as the ocean and think of thoughts as like waves on the ocean or fish swimming in the ocean. But, you know, they're not the ocean itself, just like your thoughts aren't actually the mind itself. So those are analytical meditations. And so the idea is that we can gradually transform harmful habits into positive states of mind, gradually get rid of, you know, these negative habits that we have, these harmful or unpredictive patterns of thinking, or these unproductive emotional responses that we have, transform them into more positive ones. That's what analytical meditations are all about. Basically, the idea is that you take this ability to concentrate that you're developing and do something good with it. I mean, being able to concentrate by itself is a great thing, but then being able to turn that towards an even more beneficial purpose of understanding and analyzing some of these concepts, understanding your mind, and being able to improve your mind through concentration, through analytical concentration is one of the outcomes we're looking for. So, and the idea is this can help us to enhance and promote more positive emotional states, more positive responses to things that happen around us by concentrating on the benefits of these more positive states, analyzing the benefits of more positive ways of thinking and the drawbacks of negative ones. So one of the things that, one of the concepts that they talk a lot about in this philosophy, in this system, is the idea that our minds, we're all very biased, whether we realize it or not. We do a lot of discriminating in our minds. And what this means basically is that we see things in very absolute terms, right? How many people like chocolate ice cream here? Okay. How many people think sushi is nasty? Anybody? You got sushi? Okay, well, one hand going up. Yeah, okay. I love sushi, but it's okay. I understand. So, you know, we have these ideas in our head, like if you like chocolate ice cream, you have this idea in your head that chocolate ice cream is delicious, right? You put it in your mouth and you think it's this wonderful feeling that you get is coming from the ice cream itself, right? And if you dislike sushi, you know, you have this idea that sushi is nasty. It's like you look at it on the plate and you have all these horrible feelings and you watch somebody eat it and you're going, ugh! And you think it's the thing itself that's causing these feelings. And, you know, if people disagree with us, if somebody doesn't like chocolate ice cream or if somebody does like sushi, what do you think about that? They're wrong, right? On some level, we think, you know, it's just that they're wrong, that really they just don't really understand what's going on. They know not what they do when they eat that California roll. You know, intellectually we understand that different people have different likes or dislikes, right? We understand, we all, I think, understand this intellectually. You know, different strokes for different folks. People have different tastes. You know, that's what makes the world go around. We understand that intellectually, but I think still on a deeper level, we still think that the things that we like and dislike and these opinions and perspectives that we have are the correct ones, and that people who disagree with us or see things in a different way, on some level, yeah, we can tolerate them being that way, but on some level, you know, they're really wrong and we're right. You know, we do. I mean, this is the way we think. This is the way our brains are kind of wired to think a little bit. We have strong opinions, maybe even weak opinions, but whatever they are, we tend to think that those are right, and we go with them. We have a hard time recognizing our biases as biases. You know, I mean, we're all biased in some way. Everyone is in a lot of different ways. We really have a hard time recognizing that. We have a hard time recognizing that our perspective, that our view of reality, that we're looking at things through filters, you know, the filters of our own preferences, likes and dislikes. And that really affects the way we see things in a fundamental way. You know, every one of us to some degree is seeing a somewhat distorted vision of reality. Our view of reality is distorted in some way. Not necessarily in a terrible way, you know, not like somebody who's on drugs and totally hallucinating. You know, you would think of somebody like that as having a distorted view of reality. We're not like that so much. But we all are seeing things through our own filters, the filters of our own biases, the filter of our own preferences. And it is a somewhat of a distorted perception. And one of the ways I think, you know, it's easy to see this is if we like something, or think about someone you like. Think about significant other, child, parents, you know, grandparents, somebody you really like. And we know that we have a tendency, it's probably easiest to see this in like a romantic relationship. We know that we have a tendency to exaggerate the good qualities of someone we like and kind of ignore or minimize their bad qualities. We do this. Same thing with the things that we like, right? Chocolate ice cream. We tend to exaggerate how good it is and kind of minimize. We don't so much worry about maybe some of the negative effects, like when you eat the whole thing. That whole little jar of, what's that? Ben and Jerry's, yeah. I'm more of a gelato person, but, you know, I'm with you. Just like, it's just the right size to eat the whole thing, yeah. Yeah, but we do that. We do exaggerate. I mean, everybody knows what I'm talking about, right? When you like something or you like someone, you exaggerate the positive qualities, you minimize the negative qualities. And we do the opposite with things that we don't like or people we don't like. We tend to exaggerate the negative qualities and minimize the positive ones, ignore the positive ones. And these are very deeply ingrained. They're very habitual. You know, and they come up. They happen so quickly. I guarantee that if I said one name right now that, you know, oh, my gosh, we would be going off on a tangent for, you know, and I could just sit here and say nothing and y'all would be going off, you know. I mean, there's probably a lot of names, politicians, sports figures, actors, actresses. You know, we all have these people that we have very strong reactions to. And we tend to exaggerate. They tend to be exaggerated reactions, right? We tend to have very strong feelings come up. It can be very hard for us to look at certain people or certain things from a really objective and neutral standpoint. It can be very difficult for us to have intelligent, you know, conversations about things just based on being objective on the facts. Our emotions tend to get in and drive the show. And, you know, we apply these biases to people. People especially, I think. I think it's maybe, you know, we tend to do it more easily with people. But I think maybe in some cases it's easier to see how our biases affect our impressions of people and on our interactions with people. You know, not necessarily while we're interacting with the person. We're not necessarily seeing how our biases are affecting us. But sometimes afterwards, when things calm down a little bit, you go, yeah, maybe I was a little bit out of control there, a little bit out of hand. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. And this causes a lot of problems. You know, it can cause problems when we let our these biases, these habitual patterns of attachment. In Buddhist philosophy, we talk about attachment and aversion. Attachment is this strong tendency to grasp onto things, grab onto things that we like, exaggerate the positive qualities. You know, we always want to keep these things and people around us, the people that we like. And we always want to push away from things that we don't like. We want to avoid things we don't like. We talk about them as being like two sides of the same coin, attachment and aversion. It's kind of the same kind of energy, emotional energy, but just directed in different ways. So one of the things we talk about, or one of the things we consider, and a lot of this has to do, you know, the fundamental, foundational concept that's driving this is us, is our view of ourselves, right? We tend to like people and exaggerate their good qualities when they're people who make us feel good, right? Make us feel good about ourselves. We tend to want to push away from things or avoid things or look on things or people negatively when they maybe dispute or cause us to not look at ourselves in the way that we like to look at ourselves. You know, they tend to bring up things or feelings that disagree with the way we normally want to feel about ourselves. Those are the things we tend to want to push away from and avoid. So a lot of it comes just down to ourselves and wanting to promote a certain view of ourselves. We like things that are in line with our normal view or our preferred view of ourselves. We don't like things that go against that or that disrupt that view of ourselves that we're comfortable with. So one of the concepts we talk about in this, you know, or we can talk about, is the idea of equanimity. So equanimity is, there's a few different ways to explain it, but it's basically trying to develop a more equal view, or a way to view things in a more equal perspective, particularly people. We talk about equanimity in relation to people. Recognizing the common things. Recognizing what people have in common. So one of the things we say is that, you know, all beings, all sentient beings want to be happy and avoid suffering, just like we do. You know, we all would prefer to be happy. You know, we try to be happy. We're not always good at it, but we're all trying to be happy in one way or another. We're all trying to avoid things that cause us to suffer. And we have this, you know, any person you see in one way or another is probably, motivated by those same goals. Animals, dogs, cats, even ants. Ants want, you know, they do things that will promote their welfare, and they try to avoid things that are going to harm them. So we say this is something that we have in common with all sentient beings, even insects, even ants. Every single person on the planet, we have this in common with. In one way or another, on some level, we all want to be happy. And so equanimity is simply the idea of recognizing that all sentient beings, at the very least, we're all equal in, on some level, wanting to be happy and wanting to avoid suffering. And just thinking about that as a starting point for maybe loosening up some of these concepts of attachment and aversion that we feel, some of these biases that we feel towards some people and pushing away or thinking negatively about others. And again, the idea is just to develop a little bit more of a calm state of mind and a little bit more of a maybe measured approach towards dealing with different people in different situations. I mean, the idea is it's a very practical thing, really. If you can develop this concept of equanimity, this sense of equanimity, then maybe you're not as likely to, you know, when somebody you don't like very much says something that you don't like, you're not quite as likely to go off the deep end in dealing with them. Maybe can you let some things go that are better off being let go? Or if you have to have a difficult conversation with somebody, you can do it from a more neutral standpoint, a more productive standpoint, rather than letting some of these negative emotions run the show. So that's what equanimity is all about. Kind of recognizing some of our natural reactions, some of our habitual reactions towards people and situations, and thinking, you know, is this really helpful? Is this habitual reaction that I have really helpful and really beneficial? Or is looking at things from a slightly different perspective gonna be more beneficial? So we have a meditation that, you know, I can sit here and babble about this for another 5 or 10 minutes, but I'm not going to. We have a meditation that I really like this meditation. It's in the How to Meditate book from Kathleen McDonald. And it's also in one of the handouts. It's one of the handouts for the class, handout number 12. And yeah, I really like this meditation. It's an analytical meditation. And it kind of takes you through this process of examining some of our habitual reactions and, you know, looking at whether they really have a solid basis, as solid of a basis, as rational of a basis as we think they do. So let's give that a try. Go ahead and get comfortable wherever you want to sit, on the floor, on a cushion, someplace where you'll be comfortable for 15 or 20 minutes or so. Remember, if you start getting really uncomfortable while we're meditating, you don't have to, like, suffer through it. That's not what this is all about. You can get up, you can move around, wiggle, change your position, change your way you're sitting, get up and sit in a chair if you want, get a cushion to put under your feet. Now, just try to be quiet and don't go bumping people around you, but, you know, excuse me, pardon me. But you can get up and move around if you need to. So get comfortable. Again, think about that position, back straight, legs, hands on your knees or in your lap, as you wish. Eyes closed or slightly open, jaw relaxed. Lips just slightly closed, tongue resting on the roof of your mouth just behind your front teeth. Head just slightly tilted down, just naturally directing your gaze towards the floor out in front of you. Take a moment to be aware of what's going on in the room around us. Any sounds, any sensations. It's warm, is it cold? Just notice anything going on. Don't let it carry your attention away. Just notice, observe. Then direct your attention internally. Notice your breath. Notice your breathing. Just breathe naturally. Notice your chest expanding, contracting. Maybe notice your shoulders rising and falling. Air moving in and out through your nostrils. It doesn't have to be any one of those things. Just notice your breath. Notice any thoughts. Just observe them, let them pass. Gently bring your attention back to your breath. Spend a few moments, maybe a minute or so, just doing a breathing meditation, focusing on your breath or counting your breath as you wish, just to settle your mind. take a moment to think about your motivation. Try to generate a strong intention to do this meditation, to overcome a self-centered bias that we tend to have, and judgments that we tend to fall back on very easily. Trying to develop a mind of perfect equanimity, a balanced attitude towards others, a balanced perspective towards others. That will be a benefit to us and a benefit to others too. So imagine in the space in front of you three people. One of them is someone you like. One of them is someone you dislike. And the third person is a total stranger, someone you feel indifferent towards. Maybe someone you just saw on the street today or saw in the store. Someone you don't really have any feelings of like or dislike for. Try to keep these three images in your mind throughout the meditation. So first, focus on your friend. Allow your feelings for that person to arise strongly. Feel your conviction that this person is definitely and truly a friend. That is, a person who is good to you and fulfills your needs and wishes. Also feel how you really want this person to be happy. Contemplate those good feelings. Identify yourself with those good feelings toward that person, that friend. Now shift your attention to your enemy, the person you dislike. Person who is not kind to you, who does not satisfy your needs, this person who annoys you and makes you angry, who hurts you. Regard this person carefully. Look carefully at the feelings you have about this person. Now shift your attention to the so-called stranger, the person you just barely know, but whom you neither like nor dislike. Look carefully at that person, that stranger, and note your feelings of indifference towards them. Contemplate your feelings of indifference toward that stranger. Now consider and recognize that the nature of your relationships with each of these three people and the labels you have put on each of them are based solely on what they do or don't do for you at this point in time. Think of people who have been your friend but then became your enemy, and vice versa. Or strangers who became friends or enemies. Each of these labels is temporary and impermanent. They're based just on what the situation is at a certain point in time. Move your attention back to your friend and imagine a situation that would cause the friendship to end. Imagine your friend turning against you. Experience resentment and anger and hurt that you would feel in such a situation. Do you still feel warm, friendly feelings toward that person? Do you still wish him or her well? Do you want that person to be happy? Where is your friend now? Remember that this person was not your friend before you were acquainted. Recognize how easily this person could cease to be your friend now, just as you have imagined. Think to yourself there's no sound reason for feeling kind and loving toward only the friend of this moment. Relationships have changed in the past and will continue to change. Today's friend can become tomorrow's enemy. Move your attention to the present enemy. Imagine a situation in which you could be drawn together and become close. Maybe you discover a common interest. Maybe that person, that enemy, offers a word of praise or some act of kindness. Imagine that person deciding to do something kind for you, genuinely kind. Look at that person and your feelings toward them very carefully. Are your feelings softening a bit? Becoming warmer? You can learn to feel warmly toward your enemies. This has happened before and it will happen again. Why do we hold so strongly the concept that this person is definitely an enemy? Move your attention to the stranger. Imagine how one act of kindness from that person could immediately turn him or her into a friend. Imagine how one act of anger from that person could turn him or her into an enemy. There's no inherent definite stranger there. There's no sound reason for the feelings of indifference that we hold on to. Remember that your present friend and your present enemy were both strangers to you beforehand. The enemy could become a friend. Stranger could become a friend or an enemy now. Maintain your awareness of these three people in front of you. Think about the fragile impermanence of these relationships. It's only your misconceived belief in the correctness of these labels of friend, enemy, and stranger that holds your mind back from the possibility of change and fluidity. Your friend, enemy, and the stranger all want happiness just as much as you do. In this respect, we are all equal. Also, everyone is equal in having the potential to develop their minds to the fullest extent and to achieve ultimate clarity and compassion. The differences that we see in people are superficial, based only on our mistaken and narrow self-centered views. In fact, everyone is equal in deserving our care and compassion. None of this means that we should not discriminate at all. On a practical level, our ability to distinguish between actions and individuals is necessary. Naturally, we will feel closer to some people, and we're wise to keep our distance from others. This is not in any way contradictory to the meditation. The point of the meditation is to develop equal concern, equal regard for everyone, for their well-being, whether they help or harm us at this specific point in time. And the point is also to see that the labels that we put on others are often arbitrary, mistaken, and very changeable. So as we end the meditation, dedicate your positive energy and insights to the well-being and happiness of all living beings, all beings, everywhere. Any thoughts about that?
That was awesome.
Awesome? You like that? Good. Yeah, I particularly like that one.
Mm-hmm. The clarity that came.
Would you mind using the mic?
What I like about the being here is that, and the meditating brings that clarity that I can tend to overlook. So what was really interesting by really putting myself into it, how easy love and hate can be turned all because of what I want, because it's all about me and expectations, and you know, and it's something I always have to work on, is not having those and not being judgmental, and but that really put a different twist on it that I really liked. Yeah,
good.
Yeah, because we all are, you know, any one of those people. That was a neat exercise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true.
Know? But the clarity is what I really noticed about that. Yeah.
Good.
Boy, I'm a selfish pig.
Well, we all are. I mean, there's no reason to beat yourself up about it. Because these are habits.
No, I'm kidding.
You know, these are habits. I mean, but we all are. We all are, you know, in some ways very selfish. It's just, it's a habit. And we do tend to let our perspective of other people be influenced by what we want and what we like. Which, you know, it's going to happen, but the idea is not a bad idea every once in a while to challenge whether these absolute views that we have, these very firm, solid, this person is this way, whether that's really based on reality or not, whether that's based on, you know, the way things are or just the way they appear to us.
You know, catching that in the mind before it comes out is really the key there.
Well, that's the trick. Little steps. And that's really, you know, the purpose of everything we're doing here, the meditation, the, you know, watching your breaths, watching your thoughts, seeing the thoughts arise, and you can just get, you know, you can just let them go, all the way up through some of these more analytical meditations. You know, the idea is there's no instant solution, but you can learn slowly to recognize and your thoughts as they arise. And sometimes they're going to come out anyway, and it's afterwards that you stop and say, well, okay, that could have been different. And sometimes it's, you know, with a little bit of practice, you learn to catch things before they come out and before you act on them. That's kind of the whole point, is to see how often you can start maybe having a little more control over how you react rather than just, you know, letting whatever comes up drive the bus. Yes.
Okay, so I actually had a really, really hard time with this exercise because I don't like the word enemy, and so like I couldn't think of any one person, and as soon as I did, I was like, no, but they have this thing that I like. And the same thing with someone I like, I'd be like, but they did this that I don't like, and I couldn't think of anyone I was neutral about because I was like, no, they did something that made me feel some way.
Mm-hmm.
And so like every time I would just think of this person, I would just think of like a different action that was against this label I had given them, and it was just really frustrating because I couldn't identify a particular emotion with a particular person. It was really just all of these actions piling up, and so it was very difficult for me to compare that or have people, like, I don't know, it was just a struggle.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I found it was really funny. The last time I was sitting in Meditation 101 class, it was a couple months ago, and David Mackley, one of our other Meditation 101 instructors. What's this thing doing? He was leading the class, and so when he did this meditation, and I was, you know, doing it with everybody else, and the person I thought of as a friend was him, and then I couldn't think of him doing anything that would piss me off, so that was the problem that I had. Did anybody else have a similar problem? Did anybody else kind of experience that you were kind of already a little bit as one step ahead of the game, that you thought of this person as a friend, and you thought, but, you know, sometimes they could do things that I don't like, and then the enemy, well, yeah, I know they're an enemy, but, you know, everybody's got some good qualities, and then the stranger, yeah. So if you have trouble doing that, it's okay, because you're just kind of already thinking about the whole point of it. But I still think on some level we can identify a little bit with those feelings that we have, even if it's not this idea that this person is totally an enemy and that's all they are, or this person's totally a stranger and I have no feelings towards them whatsoever. I think we can identify a little bit with the more specific feeling of we do have some sense of dislike towards some people. So you could focus more rather than on the person, maybe drill it down a little more to that, those feelings of dislike that you have, those more specific feelings of dislike. Same thing with, you know, the strangers. Like, yeah, we do maybe tend to have some, you know, initial reactions to people or some specific, even if we don't know somebody well, we have a certain reaction to them. But there is a certain level of distance between you and someone who you know, we would call a stranger, as opposed to someone you feel close to. So think about that difference between the closeness that you feel towards someone you like and that distance that you feel towards somebody who's a stranger. And that's kind of the whole point is, you know, you're kind of already getting at the point. It's not necessarily that these things are inherent in that person, but it's our feelings towards that person that we're really examining. And those feelings are there to some degree. So maybe if you do it again, you know, think about it in those more specific terms. Yeah, because that's really what it's all about. You know, that's kind of the whole point.
You know, and with what she's saying, I almost had to trick myself and the one was my partner and who's very kind, and I had to like say, okay, trick myself as if she had done something terrible to really turn that to hate. So I had to play a game with myself and kind of tweak it to get those feelings really real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they could come.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
The cap on the toothpaste, right?
Right. But they don't normally, though. I mean, you know, but.
Yep. Here you go.
So my experience was slightly different in the sense that it was the enemy person that I couldn't actually process to love, but I could do apathy. Like, I could do stranger, but nothing more than that. So I could process the fact that I was willing to have no emotion at all. So that was the difference for me. I could do from love to hate, but I couldn't do the other way around. I couldn't get to the point of changing the feelings to a more positive feeling. I could only just say I could feel nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was different for me.
Yeah, I think that's okay. Even that, I mean, think about what a shift that is from having strong feelings of dislike for somebody towards having actually just neutral feelings for them. That's a pretty big shift. You know, we tend to hang on to our dislike. We tend to be rather fond of our dislike for people sometimes, you know, because we think that that person is that way and that is deserving of that. I think, you know, I think one of the reasons why I like this meditation is because it makes me think about some experiences that I had, some interesting experiences that I've had. One was, you know, I can remember one time when, you know, I was talking to one person who was a really good friend of mine, and there was this other person who's a really good friend of mine. And I was really shocked to discover, let's say Joe is one of my one friend and Fred is the other friend, right? And I was talking to Joe one time, and I was totally blown away to find out that, who was I talking to, Joe or Fred? Talking to Joe, I was totally blown away to find out that Joe does not like Fred at all. I never knew. Right? And I'm friends with, I think they're both great people. I think they're both awesome, they're two of the most awesome people I know. It was unfathomable to me that they didn't like each other. That they really disliked, at least Joe really disliked Fred. So yeah, it's like we think that our perspective on things and the way we see people is the way they are, and it's just really strange when other people don't see them that way. So even a small shift, you know, and then it was kind of funny because recently I was talking to Joe, and Joe's like, oh yeah, Fred, he's a great guy, you know, so obviously people's perspectives change, but yeah, I mean, it is such a strong association we have between our perspective towards people and thinking that that's the way they are, you know, so even just a small shift of, well, maybe I can go from really disliking this person to just feeling neutral about them, that's pretty big, that's pretty major. Another experience I had that was very similar, you know, and this is all before I started coming to Kadampa Center and all before, you know, I ever did this meditation. It was one of the reasons I think the meditation is so cool. I remember there was somebody who I had encounters with through work. And this person was from, you know, didn't live the same place I lived. He lived in another place and lived in another country, actually. And I had some dealings with this person through work, and they were not fun conversations, right? I thought this person was being really picky and hypercritical and picking on things that really didn't matter, and they were just very opinionated and kind of a jerk. That was my impression of this person, that this person was kind of a jerk. So we'll say this person is Steve, let's say. And so, you know, I had this very negative. Steve is somebody that I would have considered an enemy, for sure. And then I was actually traveling to this country one time where Steve lived. And this other guy was picking me up from the airport, and you know, I had like a you know, the rest of the day I wasn't doing anything. I had to go and work at this conference the next day, and the guy who picked me up at the airport, you know, was like, "Oh yeah, we're gonna go to Steve's house and hang out there." I was like, "Oh," because he didn't know that I didn't like Steve. Like, okay, well, this is going to be fun. So we go over to this guy's house, and we're hanging out, and he's just like the cool, he's being really super friendly, very, very gracious host, you know, and hung out with him and his significant other, and had a great time, and ended up having some really in-depth conversations with this person. And so it was actually that same thing that I initially disliked about Steve, I ended up really liking, because he was very analytical. He was very, you know, had very, I thought, very cool insights about things. Once it was shifted away from something that I felt very strongly about, once he wasn't criticizing me anymore, it was all good, right? It was all cool. And we ended up being pretty good friends, you know, had a really good time that particular trip and saw each other again afterwards. But, you know, just a very big shift in my perspective towards that person just because circumstances, you know, caused me to be more neutral. Oh, we're going over this person's house. Well, I just have to be polite. And just that shift was the start of shifting towards a much more positive view of that person. So it can happen. You know, it happens in everyday life. It's not just some theoretical thing that we sit here and meditate about. And I think if we keep our eyes open, if we think about it and you're aware that can happen, you start maybe noticing it, maybe in some small ways or maybe in some bigger, more surprising ways. But these things do happen. They happen all the time. These labels that we place on people are very kind of very arbitrary. And just recognizing that, you know, opens the door for you to have a little bit more compassion towards people. Doesn't mean you got to go hang out with somebody who is genuinely not a good person to be around. I mean, if you know somebody who's doing things they shouldn't be doing and you don't want to be with them because you don't want to be there when the cops show up, or whatever, you know, maybe there are reasons why you would, you know, like we said, you would avoid being around certain people. Maybe they're harmful towards you and so you want to avoid being around that person, and it is a smart thing for you to do to avoid being around that person. But that's separate from how you feel towards that person. You know, if you just start fuming every time their name comes up, I mean, what good is that doing you? If you can just say, hey, I don't want to be around them, but, you know, I hope they're happy. Over there, away from me. But, you know, it's just that feeling, that recognition that we all want to be happy in one way or another. We all want to avoid suffering. We do have that core in common. And we all have the potential to change. You know, we all do. Whether we exercise it or not is a totally different subject. But we all have the potential within us to change. We all have these very flexible, plastic minds that are changing all the time and can change. And we all have that same potential in us. We all have a lot of great potential that we could reach. It's just a matter of, you know, how good we get at exercising that. Any other questions, comments?
I have another one.
Yeah.
I just run my mouth.
That's all right. That's what it's all about.
Doing all of that, another thing that has really helped me is in the judgment department, because judging people, I find, I try not to do it because I've learned that an example would be exercising. Well, you know, why do you even bother coming? You're not doing anything. You're walking. Okay. Maybe they're injured. Maybe that's the best they can do. And sometimes until we experience it and get there, we don't understand. Okay, so then you have something happen, you understand that person, and then something else comes along. Mm-hmm. Well, you're coughing, you must be a chronic smoker. And then mm-hmm. you develop a cough, and you're not a smoker, and here you've judged these people. And so what this is teaching me is I really can't judge anything, mm-hmm. right? Because I don't know. You know, it's all my own stuff. And so the clarity that comes with all that is just, you know, it unfolds new things all the time. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so much happier.
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the point.
It is. It's just...
That's the point. We do tend to make up stories very easily based on, I mean, this is the way our brains work, right? Our brains are designed to take a little bit of information and glean as much as we can out of it. It's how we avoid getting eaten by wild animals and stuff back in the day. But the problem is that we often create these stories that really don't have much basis. You know, stories about people and how they are and how, why do they do that, and they must be like this and they must be like that. I mean, we do tend to go overboard with it a little bit. And we do tend to judge people in ways that really aren't fair or really aren't helpful. And that's kind of the idea. And then we share those opinions with other people, and maybe it's not, you know, like that one story I was telling you, you know, when the one friend told me they didn't like my other friend, because I was really good friends with both of them, like it didn't bother me. It didn't change my opinion of Joe when I found out he didn't like Fred. It was just really like, wow, I was shocked. But, you know, if that was somebody that I didn't know as well, a more casual acquaintance, and they start bad-mouthing somebody else, that can make a really big, you know, I don't know if you've ever been in that situation where somebody started talking bad about someone you liked, and you're like, oh, yeah, I don't like you very much. But so if you're the one doing the bad mouthing, unfortunately, and we don't always realize, you know, we kind of just assume, oh yeah, you know, I can sit there and talk smack about this person, but you don't really know what the person you're talking to thinks about that. So sometimes it's better to not, you know, let those judgments that we have of other people drive the conversation. You never know how the person, you know, and that's one thing that, I don't know, it comes up in conversations a lot. Like I said, I've told you I work as an instructor, and we talk about things like, you know, telling dirty jokes in class, stuff like that, you know, saying things that might be controversial or offensive. Somebody might not say anything, but you never know if you're offending somebody, and they won't say anything. They're not going to say anything about it, but they might be really offended. It's the same thing with, you know, bad-mouthing somebody. The person you're talking to might not say a word, might not ever indicate that they don't really approve of what you said, but you could be making a pretty big impression on them. So there are very practical reasons to, you know, have a little bit more of a equanimous view, if you can develop that. What else? Anybody else have any comments? Anybody else have any questions as we get ready to wrap this up? So one of the things that I'm going to mention as we kind of wrap this up, the point of this class is really just to provide information, you know, for people who either don't really know much about meditation and want to learn more about it, or people who are maybe know a little bit about it, want to learn more, whatever point you're at, whatever your reason for coming to this class. The point is just to provide information and give you a little experience, give you a little bit of a chance to try some different types of meditation. So hopefully that's what we've done. Hopefully also you see maybe some benefits from establishing a more long-term meditation practice, trying to do this on a regular basis. And so we definitely encourage anybody to do that. If that's what you so desire. You may also be seeing that it's maybe not a super easy thing to do. You know, I mean, in the beginning of class, I ask, hey, has everybody been meditating every day this week? And people are like, no. How about every other day? No. And you just have to realize this is, you know, you are creating a new habit. And it's not a super easy thing to do. It doesn't come, creating new habits, especially beneficial ones. Bad habits seem so easy to create, right? I mean, they're just, boom, it's there. But, you know, positive habits, beneficial habits, for whatever reason, seem to take a little more effort. So part of it is that you have to keep at it. You know, just because you don't hit your goal, if your goal is, oh, I'm going to meditate, you know, at least four times this week, or every day this week, every morning, just because you don't hit that goal, it's not a reason to give up. You know, you have to, perseverance goes a long way. A lot of times the people who are successful at things, and this has been demonstrated again and again, there are story after story after story about this. But the people who are successful at things aren't necessarily the people who are good at it right away. The naturals, right? A lot of people question whether anybody's really that much of a natural at anything. It's people who are, tenacious about it. People who are persistent in their efforts and who don't give up even when it doesn't go smoothly in the beginning. You guys ever heard Michael Jordan has this little thing that he says? It's great. He's like, you know, this many times I've missed this many shots. This many times I've been given the opportunity to score the winning basket and missed. This many times, you know, he basically goes through this list of all these times that he's failed and how many times he's failed spectacularly in life playing basketball. People know who Michael Jordan is, right? Still. So he has this I should bring it up. I'm going to. Just give me a second. I'm going to find this on the internet because it's very cool. I should have this ready, but. Here it is. Okay. I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. 26 times I've been trusted to take the game-winning shot and missed. I've failed over and over and over again in my life, and that is why I succeed. I think that's great. I think Winston Churchill, this is attributed to Winston Churchill. I'm not sure if it's absolutely accurately attributed to him or not, but he said, success is the ability to go from failure to failure with no loss of enthusiasm. So persistence, really, if you really do want to, if you see something as having value and you really want to make it part of your life, persistence is very often how you get there. So keep that in mind. You know, if you have a certain goal, I'm going to meditate every day this week, and you don't, try again next week. And your success is probably not going to be based on whether you meditate every day this week or whether you meditate every day next week, but whether you keep working towards that goal and whether you're persistent. And, you know, focusing on the benefits. When you do sit down and meditate and you're done, you know, take a few moments to just think about how good it feels, you know, about just any positive feelings. That's part of the reason for the dedication, is to really, really let yourself experience that positive feeling, that benefit of meditating, and then just dedicate that to, part of what you're dedicating it towards is your own ability to keep doing it, to keep going. You know, remembering why you meditate, remembering the purpose of it, especially when it's difficult. And, you know, don't beat yourself up if you don't. Oh, I didn't meditate today. I'm never going to, you know, the whole thing of saying I'm never going to get this right doesn't do you any good. I'm going to try again tomorrow. We do have some, you know, and people often ask, what do we have available here at Kadampa Center? What can you do next? So normally, the way our introductory courses work is we have two main introductory courses. We have this course, Meditation 101, 5 weeks, and then we have Buddhism in a Nutshell, which is also a 5-week course. Buddhism in a Nutshell focuses on more on the philosophy of Buddhism, the history of Buddhism. But a lot of it is going into more detail about some of these concepts we've already discussed, like the mind. What is the mind? How does the mind work? The idea of having more control over your thoughts, more choice in whether you act on these thoughts, more choice on whether you just go off the deep end and let these thoughts carry you away where they want to, or whether you have the ability to kind of bring your attention back to something else, something more positive. So that's what Buddhism in a Nutshell talks about. So for a lot of people who haven't done that yet, that would kind of be the next natural thing to do. We are taking a break from Buddhism in a Nutshell and Meditation 101 for the summer, though. So we're not offering those courses for the next couple months. What I am going to do for anybody who's interested is we're going to start a Tuesday night meditation group. So I'll be here next Tuesday at 7 o'clock. If you want to come back, we can do more of the same thing that we've been doing for the last few weeks. And I kind of have it scheduled out for, I think we have it scheduled to like the end of June. But we'll see. You know, it depends on how many people are interested, how many people want to keep coming. If it's a few, then great. We'll keep coming and we can have more meditation. I mean, the way I'm planning it is more, do some more of these guided meditations, maybe go through some of the same ones we've done, maybe some new ones from Kathleen McDonald's book, from the How to Meditate book. Some more discussion. Chances, opportunities for silent meditation where you can just work on, you know, whatever you've been working on. If you know people who are beginners, like you were saying, someone you know is interested in coming and wants to know when it's starting again, we'll go and we're going to, you know, I'm planning on reviewing some of the basic stuff that we've already talked about. So for people who are newcomers, I think it'll be a good opportunity. You know, we'll go over some of that stuff again. So that will be starting next Tuesday and continue for at least a few weeks. We'll see how much interest there is. If I'm the only one who shows up, then, you know, we'll do it for a few weeks, and if nobody's showing up, then we won't. But it'll be on the calendar. It's already on Kadampa Center calendar. If you go to kadampa-center.org, you'll see on the calendar these Tuesday night meditation group, and that's what that is. So I encourage you to come back if you want to, if you want to keep doing this. Other courses we have, opportunities we have Discovering Buddhism, which is on Monday evenings from 7 to 8:30. What Discovering Buddhism is it's a 2-year series. So there are actually 14 modules in Discovering Buddhism, and each of those modules is 5 or 6 weeks. It's kind of a similar format to this. You come in for an hour and a half. We have a combination of meditation and discussion. There's a little bit more discussion in Discovering Buddhism, a little bit less meditation. And what they do is focus, each module focuses on a specific topic in Buddhist philosophy. So there's one module, I think, that's on meditation. There's one module on the mind. There's one module on compassion. So they just go into more detail. You'll spend 5 weeks talking about a topic that we may have spent, like, 5 minutes talking about during this course, or, you know, you'll spend 5 weeks talking about a topic that we might spend one night or half a night discussing in Buddhism in a Nutshell. If you're interested in that, you can start, you can kind of hop in at any time. It's not like you have to register and start at a certain date. You can just go and say, oh, Buddhism in a Nutshell, or sorry, Discovering Buddhism is going on next Monday night. I'm going to go. Just be aware that you are diving into the deep end right now, because they're doing the last module right now, which is on Tantra, which is a more advanced, very advanced form of visualization meditation. And so, you know, they're going to be talking about, like I said, you're diving in the deep end. They're talking about some more advanced topics. If you're interested, go. Show up on Monday night. They're nice people. The people who lead Discovering Buddhism are some of our, you know, more advanced students here. They're FPMT registered teachers, which means they've gone through a little more of an advanced process of studying themselves. So that's one option if you're interested. There's also the Sunday morning teachings. And for some people like those, some people it's a little bit too like ritually kind of stuff. Because we do some prayers in the beginning. We do some prayers in the end. We do some stuff for the people who are practicing Buddhists. Nothing too hardcore, but, you know, if some people are interested in that, some people aren't. Usually Geshe Gelug, our resident teacher, is teaching on Sunday morning. Sometimes it's Geshe Sangpo. But they're both really fun to listen to. And Geshe Gelug says all the time, you know, the point of this is not for anybody to become a Buddhist. That's not what we're trying to do here. If you're a Buddhist, great. If you're not, that's fine too. The point is to have a more happy mind. The point is to think something good, you know, to be a happier person and be able to benefit other people. So that's what the Sunday mornings are all about. Usually what Geshe Gelug is doing is talking about a specific Buddhist text and explaining what it's all about and all the ideas in there. And really any of the, you know, if you look on our calendar, any of the classes we have, weekday evenings or weekends, if you want to just go and see what it's all about, then go and see what it's all about. There are very, very few things we do here that you have to register for or that there are certain prerequisites. If there are, it'll say that on the calendar. It'll say, like, you must be registered for this class or doing this is a prerequisite for that. But otherwise, you know, feel free to pop in. So those are some of the things that are available here if you're interested. If you have questions about any of those, like, hey, I'm thinking about going to this, but I'm not really sure, is that appropriate or would that be a good thing for me to do, you can ask me, and I'm happy to provide some advice about that if you like. And if you want to show up here next Tuesday, we'll be here. Hope to see as many people as want to come, and we'll just keep doing this. So let's take a moment and kind of cap things off. Think about, you know, we have a pretty good group who's been coming here for the past 5 weeks, pretty good number of people. Even in spite of the Beyonce debacle on week two, people fighting the traffic, deciding to turn around and go home, we still have a lot of people who stuck with it. So give yourself credit for that. Give yourself credit for taking the time these last Tuesday evenings to come here, spend a little bit of time learning something new, working on your mind, making this effort to become a calmer person, have a little more control over your mind, over your thoughts. Maybe this is the starting point for you for a new practice, a new beneficial habit that you're going to develop, spending some time meditating every day, a little bit of time, 5 minutes. That's all you need to start with. But you've taken the time to come here and practice this, and that's a wonderful thing. So dedicate all that positive energy, all that merit, all that benefit that you have developed, that you've generated. Think about dedicating that to your benefit, to the benefit of others in your life. Expand that out. Think about how doing this can help you potentially, possibly be of benefit to all sentient beings. Just whatever effort you make to improve yourself, to improve your mind, you are part of the world. So whatever you do to improve yourself is something that you are doing to improve the world, to benefit to all. And take a moment to think for yourself. Any dedication that you want to make, any thoughts that you want to have, positive thoughts, positive dedication for the effort that you've made and the time that you've spent. Thank you all very much for coming. And hopefully we'll see you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you guys know my standard commercial. If you care to make a donation, we have donation boxes outside. You can also donate on the website. Everything that we do here is paid for by donations. We don't have a rich uncle funding the center. We don't have the FPMT sending us a check every month. So most of the people who keep this place running, except for like two, are volunteers. So if you are interested in volunteering at all, let me know. There are some great volunteer opportunities, some opportunities to work with some really awesome people and help them keep this place running. I'm always happy to tell you more about that. If you want to come become part of the lawn mowing team, I can tell you all about that. So yeah, if you have any questions at all, I'll be here for a few minutes. Otherwise, we'll see you around. Have a good night. Enjoy the rest of your week.